Conference. There's been many different classes given. So today we're looking at verse 10 of chapter 12, canto 5. Evam krisham stulam anur brihat yat. Asat cha sad jivam ajivam anyat. Travya svabhava shaya kala karma. Namna jayash, namna jaya vehi kritam vritiyam. Do you have a cushion, Rude Chanya Prabhu? Do you have a cushion there? Okay. Word for word, please. Evam. Thus, krisham, skinny or short, stulam, fat, anu, tiny, brihat, big. That remind you of something? Brihat? Big mridanga, right? Brihat mridanga, yeah. With, yat, which. Asat. What is it, asat? Huh? Not the truth, yeah. It's a impermanent. Impermanent. Cha, and. Sat. Yeah, existing. Remember that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? That to those who know the truth see that what is impermanent, how did it go? Remember that one? They have concluded that of the existence, there is no cessation, and of the non-existence, there is no endurance. This they have discovered by studying the nature of both. Okay. Jivam. Yeah, yes, the living entities. Ajivam, inanimate, lifeless matter. Anyat, knows anyat? Huh? Yeah, other causes. Dravya, phenomena. Swabhava, yeah, nature. Asaya, disposition. Kala, time. Yes, time. Karma. Huh? Karma, yeah. English translation? Activities, yes, activities. Namna, only by such names. Ajaya, by material nature. Avehi, you should understand. Kritam, done. Dvitiyam, both duality. What is that verse? Dvitiyam, abhiniveshatashat. Yeah. But duality means seeing two instead of, or seeing the opposite. Abhiniveshatashat. Okay. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Since the universe, this is Maharaj Rahuguna talking to, Maharaj Bharat is, Yad Bharat is talking to Maharaj Rahuguna. Since the universe has no real ultimate existence, the things within it, shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness, smallness, bigness, result, cause, living symptoms, and materials are all imagined. They are all pots made of the same substance, earth, but they are named differently. The differences are characterized by the substance, nature, predisposition, time, and activity. You should know that all these are simply mechanical manifestations created by material nature. So who wants to say what he said kind of in a nutshell? Or should we go through it once together and then someone can say it in a nutshell? Should we try that? Okay. Since the universe has no real ultimate existence, the things within it, shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness, smallness, bigness, result, cause, living symptoms, and materials are all imagined. They are all pots made of the same substance, birth, but they are named differently. The differences are characterized by the substance, nature, predisposition, time, and activity. You should know that all these are simply mechanical manifestations created by material nature. Okay, who's ready to give us a short synopsis? Pardon me? Mm-hmm.
All kinds of different things, it consists of words, and they're different because of time and
right. So just like all these things that we take for granted. Okay, it's all imaginary. So this is a little, for us as devotees, it's a little challenging because we don't like this. It's not real thing. Lord Chaitanya talks out about it very strongly. So let's go on and further examine it. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The temporary manifestations and varieties within this world are simply creations of material nature under various circumstances. Prakriti kriyamanani nigunai karmani sarvashaha. The activities and reactions carried out by the material nature are sometimes accepted as our scientific inventions. Therefore, we want to take credit for them and defy the existence of God. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita, Ahankara Vimudhatma Kartaham Iti Manyate. Due to being covered by the illusory external energy, the living entity tries to take credit for the differentiated creations within the material world. Actually, all these are being created automatically by the material force set in motion by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the ultimate cause is the Supreme Person, as stated in the Brahma Samhita. Who knows the verse? Loudly, loudly. He is the cause of all causes, the ultimate cause. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, long verse here. We're going to hear many verses by Madhvacharya in this purport, so please bear with us. Evam sarvam tata prakrit vayai kalpitam vishnoranyat. Evam prakritya dhara swayam ananya dharo vishnor eva ata sarva shabdas chatasmin eva. Madhvacharya is saying the original cause is Lord Vishnu, but out of ignorance, people think that matter is the cause of everything. He goes on further, Rajagoptashrayo bhumi sharanam cheti lokika vyavaharo natat satyam tayur brahmashrayo vibhu. Things are contemplated on the ephemeral or external platform, but actually this is not the truth. The actual protector and shelter of everyone is Brahman, the Supreme, not the King. Goptricha tasya prakritis tasya Vishnu swayam prabhu tava goptri tu prithivi natram gopta kshite smritaha atak sarvashraye yaischaiva gopta cha harir ishvaraha sarvantara sarvabahir eka eva janardana. The actual protectress is the material nature, but Vishnu is her lord. He's the lord of everything. Lord Janardhan is the director both externally and internally. He is the cause of the function of words and what is expressed in all sound. Is it possible to close the window? I thought it would be warm. I didn't bring a jacket. And then Madhvacharya goes on. Imagine Srila Prabhupada sitting in the midnight hour, and he's going through these vast books, and Krishna's just directing to pick out exactly the verses to support the point that's being made in the Bhagavatam. Shiraso darata yadvad grivayas tadvad eight vatu. Ashrayat vam chagoptrit vam anyesham upacharataha. Lord Vishnu is the resting place of the entire creation. Brahmanohi pratishtaham. Bhagavad Gita 14:27. On Brahman, everything is resting. All universes are resting on the Brahma Jyoti, and all the planets are resting on the universal atmosphere. In each and every planet there are oceans, hills, states and kingdoms, and each planet is giving shelter to so many living entities. They are all standing on the earth of feet and legs, torso and shoulders, but actually everything is resting ultimately on the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore he is known ultimately as Sarva Karana Karanam, cause of all causes. Om Agyana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master is forcing open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So just to kind of catch up a little bit, because it's been away from this chapter for a while. In the beginning of this chapter, Maharaj Rahugana very humbly admitted that he couldn't quite understand everything that Yad Bhad had been saying to him before. And he became quite humble. He was saying, he spoke about himself in a very humble way, and he said, my mind is disturbed because these things don't make entire sense to me. So at that point, when he actually became even more humble than Jadbara, just like Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna surrendered, Jadbara told him, you know what, you're just a fool. Probably he didn't say it like that because he wasn't materially attached. He said, you think you're the king, but actually you're a fool. He said, you think you're protecting the people, but actually you're exploiting them. He was quite heavy with them. But he knew that Jadbara Jatparat knew that Maharaj Rahuguna, in order to actually understand, had to hear this to cut through his false ego. But he didn't do it right away, if you remember. He was very humble he spoke in a very humble mood. In the beginning, yes, if you think that I'm this body and you think that I'm Indradaiva, can keep carrying this palanquin. But when the king surrendered more and more, then Maharaj Jatparat didn't become sentimental. Then he became even more. He got his surgeon out and started cutting away. It was quite amazing. Yes, the previous verse, Jatparat said, one may say that varieties arise from the planet Earth itself. However, although the universe may temporarily appear to be the truth, it ultimately has no real existence. The Earth was originally created by a combination of atomic particles, but these particles are impermanent. Actually, the atom is not the cause of the universe, although some philosophers think so. It is not a fact that the varieties found in this material world simply result from atomic juxtaposition or combination. Juxtaposition means next to each other. And then he said, today, I'll repeat the verse again, since this universe has no real ultimate existence, the things within it, shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness, smallness, bigness, result, cause, living symptoms and materials are all imagined. All these things that are just part of our day-to-day existence, he's saying they're not real. They are all pots made of the same substance, earth, but they are named differently. The differences are characterized by the substance, nature, predisposition, time and activity. You should know that all these are simply mechanical manifestations created by the material universe. So as I was studying this section in order to speak today, I remembered something that someone sent to me on Facebook. We know Facebook is full of nonsense, but sometimes there's some devotees send out some nice things in between. So there was a picture of this young girl. She's got her hands on a glass and she's trying to see through the glass. She's trying to understand something. And the caption was, reality is merely an illusion, although it is a very persistent one. And apparently it was Albert Einstein who said this. This man had such insight. He was such a brilliant, and actually he was God conscious. So in the purport of today's verse, Prabhupada mentions this verse 327 in the Bhagavad Gita. Who knows this verse? It's a famous verse. Ahankara Indra. Remember the translation for you? Just a general understanding of it? Pardon me? Basically, the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. So today, in today's verse, Prabhupada translated it like Prabhupada likes to do with verses. He brings them into life as we know it today. So Prabhupada paraphrased this verse by saying, the actions and reactions carried out by the material nature are sometimes accepted as our scientific inventions. Therefore, we want to take credit for them and defy the existence of God. So I did a little research to find out how this works, how people in the world, scientists or philosophers, take credit and they lend their name, or their name is given to certain laws that they discovered. And so I looked it up, like scientific laws and the persons who discovered them. I mean, there was at least a hundred, and it applied to every field: quantum mechanics, foundational mathematics, economics, geometry, astrophysics, linguistics. It was like, and they all had discovered certain ways in which the material energy operates, and either they gave their name to the law, or someone else gave their name to the law. So who knows of some laws that have the names of some famous scientists attached to them? Yeah, Newton's law of gravitation. He was explaining it. There's a mathematical equation which is too complex for my head, but that all the different bodies of matter in the world have a certain gravitational pull, and that's based on the mass and the this and that. Don't ask me; it's all too complicated. But he was such a brilliant intellect that he was observing this very minutely, and then he decided how it worked, and he was actually able to see how it works. So his name was assigned to it. And also he discovered something about the dynamics that govern the laws of motion, and a mathematical equation that described that. Maybe you remember a devotee that was here. Her name was Vidya Prashad, and she did Bhakti Shastra here a couple of years ago. She took a break from her studies in physics and chemistry and et cetera in university. But she said that this physics laws, this is the language of Brahman. When she went back, she's seeing how all these mathematical equations indicate the perfection of how Brahman, which Prabhupada said the whole universe is resting on Brahman, how it's operating. And there was another law that I found, a Hooke's law of elasticity. So he was explaining how the laws of elasticity work. It's amazing how people have a certain kind of a God-given intelligence that allows them to make these observations. But like I was saying, they either take the credit or the credit is given to them for these laws, but it's not their laws, it's the laws of the material nature and ultimately the laws of God. And Prabhupada said, actually, all these laws are being created automatically by the material force set in motion by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I don't know about you, but I'd like to ask you, how many of you remember, as you were growing up, looking around and observing the world, water, or the trees, or the wind, or the birds, or anything, and thinking, what's going on? How does all this work? Does anybody remember that? Because you were hearing from your siblings or from your parents or people around you that this is because of that and that is because of this, but you knew intuitively that there's more to it than this. How is it actually working? Do you remember thinking like that as you were growing up? Yeah, so it's like, what is it? What's going on? Of course, unfortunately, that spark isn't really fanned today. If you bring up these questions in school, then people think you're a little... If you want to know more, they just kind of... So my inquisitiveness wasn't satisfied, and of course it got covered over for a while, and until we met the devotees and we got to know how the Lord's energies are working. And therefore Prabhupada says, but behind all of this, the ultimate cause is Krishna, as... stated in the Bhagavatam, in the Brahma Samhita. Then Prabhupada goes on to talk about, he quotes many verses by Srila Madhvacharya. How many have seen this wonderful video about Madhvacharya's life? I really recommend it. It is sublime. I hate Indian films usually because they're usually so drawn out and so, oh God, you think, can we just get on with it? But that movie about Madhvacharya's life is really excellent. How he challenged the status quo at the time, and how he found Vyasadeva in the Himalayas, and how he became a sannyasi at a very young age, and later on how he was preached to by Vyasadeva. He just wanted to stay in the Himalayas with Vyasadeva, but Vyasadeva, no, you got to go back there. You can have mercy on these people. I've saw that movie at least 5 times, and I never got tired of seeing it because it's... And then you have these scenes where he's worshiping his deity, and all the devotees are sitting there in complete bliss. One day, Krishna, da, 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 da. Beautiful songs, and milk is pouring over the deity, and then the wonderful chanting of mantras that somehow or other they were very suffused with devotional enthusiasm, and it's very captivating. So this Madhvacharya was extraordinary. And during his time, and even today, he was considered a renegade. I got to know that because I was helping one devotee. Maybe you remember him. His name is Krishna Sharanam. He was Bhakti Kiyo before, a Japanese devotee. He asked me to look at his papers to help with the English. So I was doing that, and he was quoting how the scholars say that Madhvacharya, who wrote prolifically and cited many scriptures to support his spiritual views, but scholars today say that he just invented those scriptures, that they don't really exist. He was really at war at that time with the ongoing idea of oneness and non-duality and the oneness of the soul with God, etc. And he wanted to, he really went out of his way to put all his realizations down in written form so that people could take advantage of it for years to come. But even today he's considered a bit of a renegade. But of course, if you read what he says, like we hear some of the verses that Prabhupada quoted today, that he insisted that the original cause is Lord Vishnu, but out of ignorance people think that matter is the cause of everything. And this is because things are contemplated on the ephemeral or external plane. But actually this is not the fact. So people are not used to taking the time or the trouble to think deeply about what they're experiencing. They don't know what's going on. And so, and even then, they come, if they do think about it, they come up with some impersonal idea that you know, we're God. Actually, we're all the same as God, etc., which is like the ultimate delusion of grandeur, right? I'm God. I'm in control. And this reminded me of a beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita, one of my favorite verses, 15:9, where Krishna says, "The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all of this." And the purport, Prabhupada says, persons who are everlastingly fooled by lust and desire, they only think of things in an external way, they lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. They cannot comprehend it. Those who have developed spiritual knowledge, however, can see that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying in different ways. Not to mention suffering, right? A person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in the material existence. Therefore, those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best to give this knowledge to the people in general because their conditional life is very much troublesome. They should come out of it and be Krishna conscious and liberate themselves to transfer to the spiritual world. So this knowledge that Srila Prabhupada had, that the material energy is not our ultimate place, and that we're spirit souls who belong to the spiritual world, was driving Prabhupada. He was so this is the power of realizing this knowledge. Recently I got a beautiful DVD from Valentina from the college. She was in Russia, and she brought me a DVD of the 40th anniversary of Krishna consciousness in Russia. And Prabhupada's talking about how Prabhupada took so many risks and how Prabhupada went to Russia. It was not possible to get into Russia at that time. At that time, there was a standoff between Russia and the world, especially, you know, communism and capitalism. And it was just a miracle that they got in. And Prabhupada was always saying, "I want to go to Russia." And especially the devotees from America were thinking, "We'll never get into Russia." But they managed to get, Shyama Sundar managed to get a visa for Prabhupada and for two Americans. It was amazing. But this is because Prabhupada's desire was so strong. And so many devotees had tried to get visas. And finally, there was a visa for Prabhupada, and they were allowed there only for 5 days. And he calls his seminar, Shyama Sundara Prabhu calls his seminar, 5 days that changed the direction of the world. It's true, huh? I mean, it was a huge impact. Prabhupada's going there was like the final drop that just overflowed the dissatisfaction that people had in living an atheistic life in behind the Iron Curtain. They needed Prabhupada to come there. Of course, others had been also spreading spiritual knowledge. Christians have to be given credit for that. And finally, Prabhupada came there by Krishna's direction, and it didn't take so long after that before the Iron Curtain came down. It was phenomenal. It was really phenomenal. And this is because Prabhupada had this knowledge of Krishna and the workings of the material energy under Krishna's direction. And people who don't have that knowledge, as Prabhupada was saying in this purport of the Bhagavad Gita, their life is very troublesome. Maybe you remember that also in Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, there's one modern Catholic saint named Thomas Merton who spoke, who wrote a positive review on Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. He spoke wrote very wonderfully about Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And I read a book by Thomas Merton called The Seven-Storied Mountain about his personal journey, his spiritual journey, fascinating. And he was saying when he was young, his mother was atheistic and his father was not, they were not very fixed spiritually. But he was saying first his mother died and then his father died, grandfather died, and then his grandmother died. And he said the only thing they could do, if they didn't have any knowledge of the soul, was just suffer like animals. There was nothing to do, he said, but suffer just like an animal at this loss, at this death. So this is the result of saying that the material world is the reality and we are the controllers. It brings only misery. Whereas if one is allowed to cultivate knowledge or is blessed to cultivate knowledge, even if one cannot become very advanced very quickly, the knowledge itself gives a great deal of shelter. And Prabhupada says, the actual protector and shelter of everyone is Brahman, the Supreme, not the King. So this is translation by Madhvacharya's, of Madhvacharya's verses. The actual protectress is the material nature, but Vishnu is her Lord. He is the Lord of everything. Lord Janardhan is the director, both internally and externally. So it seems that Madhvacharya, as he was known to do, was in a philosophical debate, maybe with the king or maybe with someone else who was saying the king was the supreme. But he was giving many arguments to show that the material energy is not the ultimate cause. It's interesting that material energy is called the protectress, because she's Krishna's Shakti. But we don't necessarily always think of Maya Devi as our protectress. But I mean, ultimately, she is our mother. And in one place, I remember reading it or hearing it, that one of the reasons why it's so difficult for us to give up the shelter of Maya is because she's our mother. It's hard to give up the shelter of your mother or someone that you see as your mother. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, so in the introduction, Prabhupada says, I believe he's referring to the material energy, we're all being followed by the tigress of nescience. So we either recognize Maya as our protectress or the tigress of nescience. But if we understand that this tigress is Krishna's, under the direction of the Lord, then we don't have to be so afraid. We can think, if I follow the laws of the material energy and not always try to break them, which as controllers, if we think we're controllers of material energy, we tend to keep stepping over the line. And then, of course, the tigress growls or bites or whatever, gives us a slap. Then we can think of her as our protectress. And then Prabhupada says something also very wonderful, he quotes Madhvacharya, that the Lord is the cause of the function of words and what is expressed in all sound. So we all know about the difficulties in communication. We learned a little bit about this in some of our courses in the college. Someone drew a picture on the board, on the flip chart. So there's one face, and so he's thinking, he's a soul in the heart, and his thoughts have to go through his mind, and then finally they come out of his mouth, right? So then the words have to go into the ears of the other person, into the heart, up through the mind, and then then into his consciousness, and then he has to be able to understand what the other person is saying. So it's not easy to communicate, and it's only by the mercy of the Lord that we can understand each other at all. If the Lord wasn't as the super soul in the heart wasn't overseeing what goes on in this communication of sound, none of us would be able to understand anything because we all have our own experiences and our own way of perceiving things. And then if we think about communicating spiritual knowledge, in the prayers by the personified Vedas, the question comes up, how is it possible for a conditioned soul who's governed by the laws of material nature to understand anything about the spiritual existence because we're so controlled? And there's a whole discussion going on about that. But Prabhupada understood this very perfectly, that unless he was empowered by God to speak properly, then no one would understand anything. He said that in his prayer, Markane Bhagavat Dharma, when he first landed in America. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. So if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel engladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. This was Prabhupada's mood. He was a man of erudite knowledge. He was completely devoted to the Lord, and he knew better than anyone that if the Lord didn't empower him, no one would understand anything. And this is what's called supreme communication. Prabhupada further elaborates in the purport, Lord Vishnu is the resting place of the entire creation, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. On Brahman, everything is resting. All the universes are resting on the Brahma-jyoti. How much are we realizing that? That there's an all-pervading effulgence from which everything is manifested and upon which it's resting, the Lord's effulgence. And all the planets are resting on the universal atmosphere. In each and every planet, there are oceans, hills, states, and kingdoms, and each planet is giving shelter to so many living entities. So just imagine, the earth is considered the support of everyone, right? Even in the morning, we can say a prayer when we get up. We can ask the Mother Earth for forgiveness because now we're going to step on her. Although she's our support, she's our shelter. As far as our material existence is concerned, she's practically our everything. And now we're going to put our feet on her. So there's a beautiful prayer that you can say in the morning. So just imagine in a situation where the earth is not your support. We've heard about that recently, right? Tsunamis and earthquakes. What do you do? What do you do? You have no place to, there's no support. What would you think you would do in a situation like that? Gabriel, what do you think you would do? Pardon me? You don't know? Huh? Yes. We pray. Then we realize, actually it's so clear and it's so simple. But the Lord's Maya is so powerful that she deludes us constantly. Why does she delude us? Because we want to be deluded. But at times like that, when the karma of the individual and collective karma builds up to a certain point, then you have force to realize, I'm not in control. That's the whole thing. I think I'm in control in this world. And in times like that, we realize, no, it's not me. I'm not in control. Somebody else says, please. So Prabhupada says, they are all standing on the earth of feet and legs. So the body, the feet and legs and shoulders, everything is resting ultimately on the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is known ultimately as Sarvakarana Karanam, the cause of all causes. And we know a famous verse? Krishna says a few. Who can think of a verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that he's the Supreme? Many nice verses, actually. Yes? Iti matva bhajanti mam buddha bhava samanvita. What does it mean? Everything emanates from me. What do the wise who know this do? If you know people who know this, what do they do? Huh? Yes, they perfectly engage in his devotional service and worship him with all their hearts. Any other verse you can think of from the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna's talking about? There's so many nice verses. Krishna's revealing his supremacy. Yeah? Hmm. Savascha sarvaham. And what does that mean? I'm the knower of the Vedas, and I'm the compiler of Vedas. I'm the goal of the Vedas, like that. Yes, yes. Huh? He says, I'm situated in everyone's heart, and from me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. I'm the compiler of the Vedas, and I am the goal of the Vedas, like that. Any other verses you can think of? Pardon me? Yes, that's what's Brahmano hi pratishtaham, which is the source of imperishable happiness. No, I like that. I'll take it. Thank you. There's a verse that I'm thinking of particularly where Krishna says, Matak parataram nanyat kinchidasti dinanjaya sutrimani gana eva mai sarvamidam protam sutrimani gana eva. Who knows that verse? Yeah. Yes. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung upon a thread. So who's ever had the experience of their neck beads breaking? We've all had it one time or another with something, and then the beads go, but we never think of it until it happens, right? We don't see the thread. But if just remove the thread. So we may not see how the Lord is sustaining and supporting everything. That may not be so easy for us to see. But he definitely is. And it's very, very nice, although these verses seem a bit technical and a bit overwhelming, but we churn it, we think about it, we discuss it. In this way, Maya's influence becomes reduced. Prabhupada says that, or Krishna, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that says that those who sit and chant Srimad Bhagavatam, that the influence of the material nature dissipates, at least for the time being. So this is what we do when we hear these technical verses, and they all seem a little bit, talk about it, think about it, discuss it, and we can become very excited about this truth and become very animated and hopeful in our spiritual life. So thank you very much for listening patiently. If anyone would like to make a comment or a question or a correction, yes, Satyavrata Prabhu. He was what? Yes, yes. Yes, yes. 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 Right. Simply had to. Do you know what it means? You know how many commentaries there are? Prabhupada. Yeah, but Prabhupada was being directed by Krishna, he said himself. He said Krishna wrote these books. That's what Prabhupada said. For me, when I see this, I see that Prabhupada was being directed by Krishna to be able to pull out all these verses. There's so many verses. This isn't, yes, and he was directed to choose these ones for this purport. It's not a. Go ahead, do it. Go ahead, do it. Not with Krishna's help, with Krishna's complete direction. Prabhupada said Krishna wrote these books. I beg to differ with you, Prabhu. To me, it's not simply reviewing anything. Anyone who's done any research in the college knows what it means to have to review texts and to know which ones to use. And to do such a massive work and to pick out these verses is not a small thing. It's for me, at least, it's like this is proof that Krishna was directing Srila Prabhupada. Well, I don't think it's beyond his power, but he wasn't going to waste his time. He had to be directed by it. There were so many commentaries that he could have consulted, and he was directed, this is the ones you should use. That's my conviction. Hare Krishna. Yes, Rimi Prabhu. Yes. Yes. Our free will is that we can desire to either cooperate with Krishna, we can desire to deeply understand and to do everything in our power to make ourselves receptive to Krishna's will, or we can allow ourselves to be carried by the conveyor belt of the material energy and be devoured by her, take birth again. So it's a matter of orientating our desire, and that's why Srila Prabhupada gave us all this knowledge, all these tools. And in that way, our consciousness shifts. And so when our consciousness shifts, then we get empowered and enthused to change the motivations for which we think and feel and will and do. So that's where our free will is. And it may seem subtle, it may seem small, but it's everything. This is what determines whether we stay in this material world, whether we go up, whether we go down, whether we are sinful or pious. It's a subtle and very powerful free will. And everything rests on this. Prabhupada says that in one purport, that the whole scope of devotional life rests on this independence. It's very important that we learn how to use it properly. Is that all right? Well, it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam that this independence, this is the axiom on which our devotional service exists. So therefore, we should learn to use it properly. It's all right? Hare Krishna. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's very important because that we have the guidance of our Vaishnava Acharyas to help us understand passages like this. These are the kind of passages that, or at least in the verse itself, that persons with the Advaitin view like to latch onto and say that this is proof that the ultimate reality is not, you know, is non-dual. Actually, one devotee, Sudevi, she wrote her thesis, was called The Secret Affair Between Advaita and Bhagavatam. Because within the Bhagavatam you can find many, many verses that lend themselves to an impersonal interpretation. But of course, Prabhupada, as far as oneness is concerned, Prabhupada said we are one in essence, not in everything. So that's one thing. Therefore, the solution to the material or the unreality of material duality is not that it doesn't exist, but that it exists. It is Krishna's energy. That's what gives it whatever reality it has, because it's Krishna's energy. And nothing that Krishna creates is not real. But for our practical purposes, it's not real. We shouldn't take shelter there. So thank you for pointing that out. 1 second, I'm coming to you, please. Yes. Why living symptoms are considered one of the... Yes. Louder. Yes. Yes. The living symptoms are imaginary. Yeah, right, right. Are all imagined. Well, what I would understand by that is that we judge living symptoms based on what we can see, but many times there's a lot going on that we can't see, although we may not see. First of all, someone's very animated. What comes to my mind is like, what is action? You know, inaction, inaction, and action, inaction. That verse in the Bhagavad Gita. So only a person who is in real knowledge can understand what action is and what inaction is. That's what comes to my mind. So what we call living symptoms to us, this dictates to us what life is. But life is not necessarily just based on these living symptoms. Life is based on realization of our eternal spiritual understanding. That's how my mind addressed it. Would anybody else have something to say, Tatvidur? You could say? So, like, for instance, in the Bhagavatam, it says that a person who doesn't use his body in order to serve the Lord, he's considered a dead body, although breathing. Prabhupada considered to like a bellows in the blacksmith. It's going, but there's no life. So that's my understanding. Is that a little, gives a little bit. If we only look at the living symptoms of the body, but we don't understand the soul, then we're still imagining that we're seeing things clearly. But we're not. Yes, Gaye. Yes. Well, it's very generous. Scripture is like mother, right? Scriptures are considered the mother. Mother's always very generous. So Krishna's like that too. He makes the world in such a way that you can either see him in it or you won't see him in it. So the Shastra is the same way. But in any case, anyone who studied the Srimad Bhagavatam deeply, even scholars, will say that these verses may sometimes appear to give an Advaitin view, but the overall text, it's not possible to interpret it in an Advaitin view. There may be some verses that people can say are Advaitin or can interpret in that way, but the Bhagavatam as a complete whole, there's no way that you can say that the ultimate truth based on Bhagavatam is non-dual and impersonal. That's just not possible. But Sanskrit language, the Vedic scriptures are very generous, and people can, according to their inclination, take from it as they would like, because that's Krishna's very kind. He gives us a lot of space. Yes. Nice. Yes. Wonderful. Like they, in many purports, like Prabhupada, based on Jiva Goswami or the other, someone may say, and then that argument is defeated, and someone may say, and that way, this is called the paksha, right, in the there's a statement, there's the contradiction, and then there's the defeating the contradiction. This is the way, we see, we have so many misconceptions in our mind about what reality is. We're not even aware of what they are. But the acharyas are. So they pick out all the misconceptions and they spell them out. And then you say, oh, like that. So thank you. Well, that's really nice out of it for clarifying that. Yes? Well, she's only doing it for our ultimate benefit. She's only doing that for our ultimate benefit. And the problem with us is that we are dealing with her in such a way that she has to deal with us like that. But when a person actually takes shelter of Krishna, then Maya Devi, you can really understand that she's done her service very well. And also, Prabhupada says that when a devotee is very sincere in his spiritual path, all of the demigods, and he said there's like an invisible chain between the devotee and the demigods, so that everything works and so that you can advance towards pure devotional service. So Maya is just reciprocating with us according to our desire. But if we don't cooperate and do things according to the laws of material nature, which are ultimate Krishna's laws, then we have to take the reaction. And ultimately that reaction is beneficial for us because it forces us to realize that I'm not the enjoyer, I'm not the controller. I am an enjoyer, but I'm a subordinate enjoyer. I enjoy when I participate in the Lord's enjoyment, which is like an unlimited ocean. Why would you, you know, go and try to enjoy it in a little puddle if you can enjoy in an ocean of enjoyment? So Maya is helping us in that way. We don't seem to get it any other way. Sometimes the mother has to do that. Reuben Jerry's mother, sometimes you have to be strong, right? You don't like to, but... And sometimes there's passages in the scripture where Maya Devi's complaining that she doesn't like her job. It's a thankless task. But she's very devoted, so she does what Krishna wants. Yes, Prabhu? Yes. Yes, we have to properly, it's very important that we properly understand and assimilate this knowledge. And of course we have to be very, very, very sincere to understand it properly. We don't want to settle for anything less, because that means we're just going to keep coming back into this material world and being confused. And sometimes, Prabhupada says, sometimes floating in the ocean of Maya, sometimes drowning. So if we instead... determine that actually this life is meant for this. It's meant for realizing the absolute truth. It's a really nice... George Harrison wrote a really nice song in this regard. It's called Beware of Darkness. He wrote many nice songs, actually, and he's going, Beware of Darkness, and then he goes, Beware of Maya. It can get you. And he says, this is not what... And this beautiful line, he goes, and this is not what you're here for. You're not here for this, to go into depressions or anything. You're here to go in the right direction, which is to go back to Krishna. Really nice reminder, even a simple song. Prabhupada really knew how to engage him, and he did it wonderfully. So thank you all for your enthusiastic participation. I know for sure that that you guys' merch is all that I'm made of, so I'm very grateful that we could have this exchange. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada Nugas ki jai.